go briefly and understand mental health itself. Now, when we talk about mental health, what exactly are we talking about? Let's begin with you, Mr. Geoffrey.
Yeah. Thank you, Sebit, for bringing this important topic of mental health on board. You already highlighted mental health is very important. It's integrated part of our health. This time it's a part of primary health care integrated already by WHO. I think in South Sudan we're already implementing that. That means access to mental health related services should be at a lower level. And it's very important because these are two important things. Without the mental health, the physical health will collapse. So if we integrate the mental health and physical health, I think we should be able to function well, able to be able to contribute to our community and the country. So mental health is a state of well-being in which every individual realizes his or her own potential, can cope up with normal stress of life, can work productively, fruitful, and is able to contribute to her or his community. What are the keywords here? You are able to realize and cope up with everyday life of stress. Because, you know, stress doesn't have a vaccine like other things. So every day we experience stress. So are you able to cope up with your everyday stress? Are you able to contribute to your community productively and fruitful? What does that mean? If you have a population that is healthy, with good mental health, that means productivity becomes good. The country is able to harvest a lot of things from the community, from the population. That means production on the country becomes also high. So mental health is, that's how mental health is being defined. Otherwise, what is mental illness also? Because we are talking about the health. What about the illness? Illness is a condition involving change in thinking or behavior or combination of this. Mental illness associated with the distress or problem function in social, work or family activities. So if you're not be able to cope up with the stress in life, you're not be able to function well, you're not able to work well, you're not able to be productive, then you should be going through what they call mental illness. So but at this time we are more emphasizing about mental health. So when we promote mental health, that means we are likely to minimize mental illness.
Great. We also have in the studio Dr. Patrick Sokiri. Dr. Patrick Sokiri, let's talk about South Sudan itself. South Sudan is said to have one of the largest mental health gaps in the world. Why is that so?
You know, South Sudan, as you said, as you clearly put, is among the countries struggling with mental health related challenges following series of crises in this country. You know, if you go back, we have realized that South Sudan has gone through a marathon period of conflict, and that is a recipe for a plethora of mental health conditions. Now, not only that, you know, health and physical health and mental health are so intricately, you know, linked. And as, you know, my colleague Godfrey has crystal clearly stated, you know, for somebody to be healthy, the complete physical and mental well-being, not only mental well-being, even the social well-being, must all be balanced. Okay, but they must be taken care of. So, you know, it's not merely the absence of disease or infirmity in that context. So, basically, every country that goes through conflict, and not only conflict, but even post-conflict, we will always find that, you know, there are a lot of mental health conditions prevalent. Now, not only do people experience home-related types of crises such as, you know, night robberies, you know, tortures, attacks, living in substandard conditions, calamities like floods that are happening in other parts of this country, and you know, they are repeated again and again, you know, being in a tropical environment whereby, you know, dikes break, you know, the river bursts its banks, and you know, dikes are not available to stop that from happening. The depth of the Nile is getting, you know, because of this clogging with you know, so a lot of infrastructure issues, you know, drainages are contributing. Drainages that are supposed to be there are, you know, not in place, and hence flooding happens. So these natural disasters all contribute to stress. And then the other thing that we have to take into consideration is, you know, in conflict, you know, there is always people witnessed complex, you know, conditions that, you know, what we call critical incident stressors, you know, and this critical incidents is all will lead to manifestation of diverse mental health conditions, post-traumatic stress disorder, and complex post-traumatic stress disorders. So this, in a nutshell, are the reasons that make this part of the world that we live in, called South Sudan, prone to this high number of,
mental health conditions. Yes. Now, talking about mental health is one of the topics probably not being talked a lot about, or people like to deny it, talking about it if they have some mental health challenges. Now, just how can one identify mental health challenges in themselves? Is this possible?
Yes, of course, that's quite possible. Before we talk about that, I just want to highlight more about what Dr. Sokiri talked about. Mental health and its consequences, what are the things that we might likely to see major mental health-related issues after long conflict in South Sudan. We are likely to see things like trauma. Trauma is one of the mental health conditions, it's a psychiatric condition. Further trauma is divided into three. We have acute trauma as a result of single incident. If there's an incident that somebody has been exposed to, whether it's a rape issue, whether it's a war issue, whether it's somebody has been killed around you, death of a colleague, you might be able to go what they call a single trauma incident. Chronic trauma is also repeated, a prolonged conflict. Of course, that's what I think most people in South Sudan are. Conflict have been repeated and it's prolonged. People have been going through that. Then we also have what they call complex trauma. It's exposed to variant and multiple traumatic events, and the invasive and personal nature. And that is the most complex type of trauma to treat. It can come with other psychiatric related conditions. Apart from that, there's also what they call vicarious trauma. What's vicarious trauma? Vicarious trauma is secondary traumatization. You may not be directly exposed to traumatic situation, but I think every day we are hearing this news about somebody has been killed, somebody has been involved in a critical incident. Maybe you're not directly, but that you may be able to experience similar symptoms as if you're the one directly impacted by the traumatic situation. So this is some of the things that we are likely to experience. Now, when we're exposed to all this type of traumatic situation, individuals, human individuals, are likely to develop what they call the traumatic stress disorder. Disorders which are related to this trauma. After the incident is not there, 3 months, we are still experiencing similar symptoms as if the situation has just happened. You can't be able to get up with the sleep. You cannot be able to cope up with your daily activities like going to work. It interferes with your normal operational activities. You're not able to sleep well. You're not able to eat well. After 3 months, the incident is not there. Then after 1 year, you're still you're in a safe place. You feel it's safe. Even people notice that around you, you're safe, but you're still experiencing similar symptoms. As Dr. Sakir said, you might be going through what they call post-traumatic stress disorder. And then because of this, people normally relate to what they call negative coping mechanisms. Coping mechanism, generally. You either cope well or you don't cope well. You cope negatively. How do people cope negatively? Because I don't get sleep at night, what do I do? Do I have to abuse alcohol? That's why they said there's use of substance and alcohol,
to sleep.
Or there's abuse. What is the use of alcohol and substance? I am this social drinker who goes and takes alcohol after 1 week. But am I going to? Am I going through a situation that is making me not to adjust well, not to sleep well, not to socialize well? I go into massive use of substance so that I can be able to
cover up.
Either forget, but you don't forget. Either sleep well. Either fit in a community well, because you have been stigmatized so that people can be recognize you. You have been stigmatized, you have been discriminated. So what do you result to? You result to this kind of behavior as abuse of substance, joining a group where you are acceptable, because where you are living, you are not acceptable. So these are some of the things that we are likely to experience. So in this kind of situation, how do you recognize that somebody might be able to have mental illness? Because we know how you are. People at home function, your colleagues function. Is there change in behavior, emotion, socially? Is somebody not social? Used to be socializing. Is this person not socializing anymore? Is this person used to eat healthy? Is this person not eating healthy anymore? This person used to sleep well. Is he not sleeping well? Does he get nightmares? Does he wake up and decide that something is coming around? You go there, there's nothing. So these are some of the symptoms that we need to start. There are physical symptoms, behavioral symptoms, emotional symptoms, emotional outbursts. Where people easily angered.
All of a sudden, you just find someone, you know, losing their mind.
Exactly. All these kind of things. Yeah. So these are some of the things. If there is change in behavior, cognitive or physical kind of things, then you should be able to recognize that this person is not doing well. Is not coping up with the everyday stress, or is not coping up with the stress on that is going through. And this do not only happen with the adults, it also happen with the children. So these are some of the things, that symptoms that we need to observe within our colleagues, with our family members, with our friends.
Great. Yeah. Now, Dr. Patrick, does this all that we've been talking about, does it have a cure?
Not really talk of a cure, but because, you know, mental health conditions are a bit complex, you know, they require, you know, not a simple, you know, prescription. It's not just, you know, giving a medication and that is it. It's a multidisciplinary approach. That's why in a mental health facility, there are, you know, mental health, you know, counselors, you know, and the psychiatrist alone cannot. There's clinical psychologists, behavioral psychologists, all these team work as a group to, you know, to address that. And then as he said, you know, the best thing, you know, that we can always get to is to identify that something is wrong. Mm-hmm. Then from there, you know, and then every case is peculiar. You know, not two cases will have, you know, exactly the same approach. Mm-hmm. It requires, you know, a tailored management. It's not just, you know, like if somebody has, you know, a disorder, just a matter of prescribing and khalas, inta. Okay, so it's a social approach, it's a psychiatric approach, it's a pharmacological approach. So all these add up to address the situation that is being faced.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, as I said earlier, there's people find it so hard. They might be struggling, they might be stressed, they might be traumatized about something, but people still fear to come out to, you know, say, I need counseling and I need some help. It's very less, you know. Sometimes people say, no, this is not an African thing. I've heard those people saying that, you know, we can just deal with it like a man. Why is it important that people should actually be seeking help once they realize that they are not doing the normal routine, as you did mention earlier? But also things sometimes, you know, mental challenges have been associated, stigmatized. People, you know, like the stigma, people with mental health issues. How can we get rid of this to ensure that mental health is just like any other sickness, that you needed help and you should actually be going out there to get help?
I would come in then, and Godfrey would chip in.
Sure.
You know, you crystal clearly spelled it out. The whole thing has to involve, you know, involving multiple stakeholders. On the lead, the government. Okay. If we look currently, we realize that facilities that have mental health services are very few. Probably, I don't know, the last time I checked was around 3 facilities that can give quality mental health services in this country. How many psychiatrists do we have? Less than 5.
In the whole country.
But, you know, it's, so technically that tells you that there has been some sort of a neglect. And then again, that turns to how much resources are we pulling? Because depending on the attention we put to to something, then it tells us that, you know, that thing is important, and then it is part of us. Now, the other thing is, the stigmatization that comes because managers are not sensitized. Employers are not sensitized about the aspects of mental health. Mental health is part of us. It's part of health like any other medical condition. And then unfair treatment by those who are in leadership positions when somebody has a mental health condition. Now, that can only be dealt with, as I said, by increasing sensitization, not only sensitization to the common men and women out there, but also healthcare providers, because healthcare providers play a very, very big role, you know, in normalizing mental health, just like the approach we did with HIV, whereby everybody was involved, same approach that can, you know, it comes here. Advocacy for a scale establishment of mental health facilities all over, countrywide, at all levels, you know, at not a single level. I would quote a country like Rwanda, nearby here. It doesn't have so many resources, but if you look at the cadres they have, you know, they probably have the largest number of counselors mm-hmm. in the community at all levels, healthcare providers, count, you know, because they realize this is a country where mm-hmm. people have gone through so much trauma. So that has to be prioritized. So mental health has to be taken to a different level. And then the basically there must be a conducive environment whereby mental health services are administered and mental health sufferers can seek services. These services must be highlighted mm-hmm. and these services must be made known to everybody in the community. Then lastly, I would say that it is our role to in the family to make sure that if there's a mental health condition, instead of us going and hiding ourselves, mm-hmm. we speak openly. You know, there are many examples, if we cite them here, whereby, you know, somebody started behaving differently, as I said, then suddenly the first thing we said, if the person is drinking, say, mm-hmm.
so we start judging the person.
Being judgmental instead of mm-hmm. helping, realizing mm-hmm. what could be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that alone, a sensitization, a countrywide sensitization mm-hmm. is important to make sure we highlight the issues of mental health. And not only here, it must be included in the syllabuses, just like anything else. It must mm-hmm. be taught in schools, you know, it must be preached in public places, and we'll be there.
All right, thank you. If you just join us, you're listening to the Miraya Breakfast Show, of course, where the big conversation begins every morning. My guest this morning, we have Dr. Patrick Sokiri from the HIV AIDS unit of the United Nations Mission in South Sudan. And we also have Geoffrey Opoka, who is a staff counselor with ANMIS. We are talking about mental health. I'll give you a chance later to call in and ask them any question or share your thought with us this morning here on the Miraya Breakfast Show. Yes, Mr. Geoffrey, just before... I mean, like, if you have something to add on what we discussed earlier, you also try to tell us, you both of you are counselors and you're very good at, of course, what you do. Why is counseling very, very important when it comes to issues of mental health?
Okay. Before I answer that, let me first say, add on what Dr. Sakiri talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mental health should be a concern for all of us. Most cases here, what we do is we only leave it for people who are suffering from mental health disorder.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody comes together, because, you know, mental illness affects the society, not only the person who is sick,
mm-hmm.
the whole society is impacted by that. So if we all join hands together, we invest in mental health. Everybody, every sector, government, private sector, individuals, all invest in mental health, then we should be able to have productive and fruitful society and the country as well. So you're talking about why is counseling very important?
Mm-hmm.
Counseling is a part of integrated part of treatment of mental health, because we have a called provision of counseling services and provision of medicine. So medicines are prescribed by psychiatrists, and then counselors do the psychotherapy or counseling services. There's a difference between counseling and psychotherapy. Counseling is a provision of short services, but psychotherapy is a long-time provision of services, and then with the follow-up and integration of the person back to the community. So this is important, because medicine itself doesn't work alone. How do you deal with the behavior-related issues?
Mm-hmm.
That's why this is what they call, in the council, they are called cognitive behavior therapy. What does cognitive behavior therapy, how does it work? They use the techniques to make sure that the person's thinking is restructured, cognitive behavior restructuring, and then the behavior aspect of it, then persons will be able to be accept that, okay, he is going through all these mental health related issues. Then how does the person be able to cope up with the daily life?
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, this person is not able to function well. You need to work up with the person to make sure that he is integrated, is functioning well. And then apart from this therapy that you only offer to this individual, you go ahead to provide counseling services back to the community where this person come from the family.
Mm-hmm.
Because after the treatment of this person in the facility, when the person goes back to the community, is not going to go through what they call discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
When discrimination happens way back home, is stigmatized, what will happen? Healing doesn't take place.
Mm-hmm.
It comes back. So the counselor also works with the family members, with the community, to make sure that this person is integrated. His problems are understood by the community. This is not something which is his own making. It's like another sickness. It can be treated. So this is why counseling and pharmacological-related issues are all integrated in the treatment of mental health. Yep. So counseling helps to identify what could be the root cause of the issues, because sometimes we use what they call diagnosis. What is it that the person is suffering from? Because mental health is classified. Mm-hmm. Is it the person is suffering from clinical depression? Is it PTSD? So after going through this, you diagnose. After diagnosis, you give your report to the psychiatrist. Then the psychiatrist do what they call prescription of the medicine. And then you do the follow-up. So psychiatric services, counseling services, other health-related issues are all integrated in the treatment of mental health.
Right. Thank you. Yes, Dr. Patrick, you work at the HIV/AIDS unit of the United Nations Mission in South Sudan. Now, is HIV still a big issue on matters of mental health, or would you say practitioners and advocates have done a good job at educating people at the community levels?
Ah, beautiful. By the way, our unit ceased to be called the HIV/AIDS unit. It is now called the Infectious Diseases and Health Promotion Unit.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yeah, so basically, HIV becomes one key part, but still we focus on it, you know. Yes, mental health is an integral component, not only of HIV, but every health, physical health condition, being in infectious medical conditions, are chronic medical condition, or infectious or non-infectious medical condition. For people living with HIV, taking care of both physical and mental health are important. You know, people with HIV are at a higher risk of some mental health conditions than people who are not HIV positive. And then, as Godfrey has clearly stated, mental health conditions are manageable. They are treatable. I would not say curable, because I would be making a subjective statement, because I know of the challenges involved. So basically, the World Health Organization and the global partners in the response have coined what we refer to as the 5 C's of HIV management, not even HIV interventions, but other related infectious medical conditions. Everybody coming to know their status, being it HIV, being it another sexually transmitted infection, first they must consent, to getting that care. And then they are given counseling, and then they are given correct results. And when they're given that correct results, they're given information. Basically, what does counseling entail? It entails giving basic facts. And this not very complicated scientific rigmarole, but basic facts to make the person understand. Because if the person understands the condition, then we look, what are the options available? And when the options are made available, we now look at what is it that you can take, what is it that you can take. Then we discuss the problem, and we look at it more objectively. Then this problem is normalized, and a problem shared, a problem discussed, is a problem technically solved.
Indeed.
Okay, then after that, we now connect the person to services, and the services are either within or outside.
Exactly.
And then most of the times, we have adopted what is referred to as the POC. POC is not the protection of civilians, right?
Okay.
It's a point of care management.
Okay.
When somebody comes, because when you send them elsewhere, anything can go wrong in between. Or the quality of the service might have an issue. So if you provide all the services integrated in one facility, in one gathering, it makes life easy.
All right. Yeah. Mr. Geoffrey, in South Sudan, obviously, for lack of information, some people, when you talk about mental health, they think these are people who are basically already on the streets, people who are probably moving naked, or people who are just like, and all that. But still, when we look at the issues of mental health, if not treated, if not handled at early stages, what are the dangers here? What are some of the dangers that we can see on daily basis when it comes to issues of mental health, if not handled, or if they do not get any help?
Yeah, when you're talking about people who are walking the streets, who already have lost connection with the reality, we call them, they have lost connection with the reality.
Mm-hmm.
We call them, they're psychotic.
Mm-hmm.
They're going through psychosis. This is a psychiatric identified condition, because they are now ready for treatment. But of course, all in all, before you reach that stage, you know, there are stages of sickness.
Yeah.
You start with the mild stage until when you go to that chronic stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, already talked about most of the medical related conditions that you could be able to, among others, includes things like PTSD, we already talked about.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about psychological problems such as sleep disorder, anxiety disorder, acute stress disorder. These are some of the psychological problems that can be able to see. Mm-hmm. But they're also about social issues that we normally neglect and we don't see. We have issues like anger, bus, increased number of street children. These are things because they cannot be able to, they are not accepted in the community where they are. So what do you do when you're not accepted at home? You come to the streets to join the place where you're accepted. We have issues like cycle of conflict,
violence, you know.
Violence. Mm-hmm. Of course, poverty is there. We talk about substance and alcohol abuse, early marriages, relationship related issues. Because if somebody is not mental, what do you expect?
Mm-hmm.
Issues of relationship don't work well, or these are some of the social issues that you are likely to identify.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue here is we need to know which one are the social issues, which are more medical issues. So if you're able to see, if you see any social issue that the person is going through, that means you might be going through mental health related issues. If you see also psychiatric related issues, psychotic related issues, where the person is able to, is talking alone, cannot be able to take care of his health, change of clothes, cannot be able to do that, cannot be able to brush. Body maintenance, cannot be able to do that, and has disconnected himself from the reality.
All right.
And then that should be able to go through a serious mental health disorder. But why do you wait until that stage?
Okay, so one of the things that we've seen in the country here that is happening, we've seen sometimes cases of suicide happening in other, you know, parts of the country and all that. Is this related to a mental health problem?
Exactly. So, you know, suicide is one of the post-conflict suicide is one of the most common thing that happens after a crisis. If I'm not able to manage my situation well, I'm not able to cope up with the difficult stress, what happens? I go through what they call clinical depression. My mood changes, I lose interest in everything. I start looking life as something that is useless. I cannot be able to manage. I cannot be able to cope up with.
Right.
So what do I do? The best alternative I can be able to say is, okay, fine, I think this place is not worth for me to stay. Why don't you make sure that I take my life off? This could be because of social-related issues. I'm not accepted. I'm trying to talk to people. People don't understand me. Nobody supports me. I don't have the support system. So the best option that I have to do is I decide to take my life off.
Yes, talking about that. Yes, talking about that lack of support system. And let's talk about support system here. Who should be providing the support system? Family, friends, you know, community, government. Where should support system normally come from here?
Everybody. Family is the smallest unit of how a person functions daily. So if you're able to get your support from the family, that will be very important. At last, the community. And then after that, it goes to government layers. So if your closest friends are able to support you, then they should not be able to go that. So before that, we need to know that, okay, what are the signs of suicide? If you're able to know, this should be something that should be also put in to educate people who are dealing with the health-related issues, people who are dealing with the community protection-related issue, community leaders, family members should be able to. How do you notice that somebody is likely to commit suicide ideation symptoms? So if you notice that suicide ideation symptoms are in this person, what are the steps that you need to do? So technically, sometimes you cannot be able to do much. You need to make sure this person is taken to hospital. He's hospitalized. After hospitalized, he's sedated. After that, then counseling or psychosocial support can now come in.
All right.
Yes.
Yes. Dr. Patrick, you'd like to add something on that?
Yes. He has said it. You know, one mental condition that we would highlight, you know, is the ubiquitous bipolar disorder. And he has touched on it. The bipolar disorder is a serious mental illness characterized by extreme mood swings. Extreme mood swings. The person at times is on the low end, which is severe depression, any level of depression, you know, the person suddenly shuts himself off,
isolates him or herself.
And basically everything they do, they feel they are not doing more than enough, they're so negative, and that is an early bad sign. That person might later on slam up and end up, you know, taking
their lives.
And the extreme wing is, you know, where the person is displays extreme excitement, and then ultimately the excitement might, to some levels, might also be manifested as aggressive behavior, and that alone might end up the person committing a crime, you know, taking somebody's life, injuring somebody, hitting somebody. So these are all, as you said, you know, a lot of, you know, sensitization, a lot mental health, and the must be part of us, must be part of our education, must be part of our sensitization.
All right, let's pick some phone calls this morning here. Remember, we're talking about mental health. My guests, we have Dr. Patrick Shokiri, and we have Geoffrey Opokam here with us in the studio. So yes, you can call us, and of course, let's take our first caller in this particular segment. Miraya, good morning. Your name and where you're calling from?
James
Duor here in Juba. You said where exactly?
I'm in the University of Juba.
University of Juba. Okay, James, yeah. Please reduce the volume of your radio and go ahead with your comment or a question.
That one was the echo in the phone because my phone got spoiled. I don't have radio, you can hear me.
It's okay, I can hear you well. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I would like to begin by saying this mental illness is caused by three things that I know, but they might know more since they are expert on in that field. Mm-hmm. One is caused by you having a person being killed instantly without you not knowing that that person should have just gone like that. And that thing immediately develops some illness and will make you to be mad. How should you advise such a person? Two, it's caused by you are employed in some job, but you lose the job in a rough manner, of which you should think too much about that, then it also results in such. What can you do about that? Finally, I would like to ask one question from the person representing HIV. Mm-hmm. You know, this HIV illness in some areas, for example, let me say the area, like Lake State, majority are not circumcised, which results to this HIV infection seriously or rampantly, because majority are not really circumcised. What advice can you give to such a people so that they are circumcised in the area, so that it will be a part and partial of precautionary measures that are supposed to be given and that are supposed to be disseminated to them so that they know the importance of that? What are your preparation to make sure these communities are aware so that they take that issue of circumcision as a serious matter for their health?
All right, thank you. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning here, James Duor, from the University of Juba. Well, let's give a chance right away to our guests in the studio so they can respond to James, so we can pick another caller. James mentioned, first of all, about the death of a close one, like just suddenly losing someone who is close to you, losing a job as well, and then, of course, with the HIV also, Dr. Patrick can react to that. But first, what would you like to tell James?
Yeah, losing a dear one actually is quite traumatizing. We put that under critical incident stress. That's what we go through, or traumatic stress, because you have been used to that person losing a dear one, makes it very difficult for you to cope up with the stress that has happened. We call it and this kind of situation, we may be able to react, exhibit certain kind of behaviors, socially, cognitive, emotionally, outbursts, all those kinds of behaviors we exhibit in them when you lose a dear one. What happens in this kind of situation, we call it normal reaction to abnormal situation. You allow the person to go up with, to mourn, to exhibit this kind of behaviors. We don't prevent. If the person is crying, all this kind of thing, the person go through all those processes. After some time, because it's too much for the body to accept, the brain to accept that you have lost a dear one, it takes a process. After that, the person should be able to resume, accept the situation, resume with the normal activities. But if after sometimes, after 3 months, the person not able to resume and operate with these normal activities or normal activities, he or she might be going through what they call traumatic stress disorder. as I talked before, the symptoms, even if you should, under normal grieving processes, you should be able to cope up well. Accept this person, you have left a door. But if the grieving process becomes complicated, it keeps disturbing you, you cannot be able to eat well, you cannot be able to cope well, you cannot be able to engage in daily activity well. What will happen is that you might be able to go through what's called clinical depression. Your mood is down, and then you start going through all those mental health-related symptoms. In this situation, kind of situation, feel free to seek help. And the help you'll be able to be given. Great. But however, during grieving process, what is very important, if you lose a dear one, you need a support system from your colleagues.
All right.
The support system at initial stage will help you well to cope up with the stress. James talked about unemployment or losing a job, because you know employment is a source of where your life depends on.
Yes.
So if you lose all this, you're not, now you're being removed from your job, how do you start life? You start thinking about, how do I start life? But the question is, like most cases, how we don't cope well after this kind of situation, we ask ourselves quite a lot of what they call why. If we can ask ourselves how, how questions, how do I move up with this, how do I start from here, how do I, these kind of questions will be better. But if you say why me, why did I lose this job, out of everybody, why me, then because that of this it will become stuck in you, you'll not be able to develop what they call coping mechanism, adaptive mechanism to look at alternative way of living.
All right. Dr. Patrick, what would you like to respond to James Dwar?
I'll tell him that thank you very much for highlighting that. The last Sentinel survey, or the last spectrum results from the Ministry of Health, jointly released by the Ministry of Health and UNAIDS, showed Lake State and Western Equatoria States. Western Equatoria State still has the largest, the highest number of people living with HIV, and Lake State has a significant rise. You know, a rise of more than 0.5% is quite significant. So we know, the issues of HIV rising in Lake State are not attributed simply to one factor, that is lack of circumcision. We know many places, of course, circumcision offers, voluntary medical male circumcision offers up to 60 to 70% protection from getting infected with HIV. But I would say there are other things, like, you know, whenever there's conflict, we have known that before the coming of the current governor, Lake State had witnessed very tumultuous times of conflict and violence, and especially low-key inter-ethnic confrontation, which is very unfortunate. But we're happy that at least, you know, it's, the level is coming down, and because whenever there's conflict, there is definitely conflict sexual violence, and that is one very important vehicle for increasing the spread. Yes, we are aware of that. That's why the mission gave us the okay to have a training. And usually we have what we refer to as, you know, force multipliers. The force multipliers are change agents and peer educators that we train, and they should they always, we do it in coordination with the South Sudan AIDS Commission, the Minister of Health. They send us these persons, we train them for 10 days, and they go out there and act as agents of change.
All right.
So we did that. That great. Was our last training last week. So I think thank you very much for bringing that.
All right. Let's take one more caller this morning here on the Mobile Breakfast Show. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Sabit.
Yes, please welcome, your name
John
and where you're calling.
Rumbeck.
Sorry, John from Rumbeck. John, it's good to have you in the program. Please go ahead with your question right away.
Okay. You really hit half our time, actually, you know, to have more.
Indeed.
We'll
do it next time.
I will go straight to the question. Problem. I will go straight to the question. You know, mental problem, I believe to be, a traditional problem. Because when you take somebody with a mental issue to the hospital, people tell you that, you know, this is related to our community. People believe that maybe you might have done a misfortune somewhere, and that is what is haunting you. They don't believe it's a medical problem. Now, my question is, what can be done to change the mindset of our community to believe that a mental disorder is a medical issue?
All right. Thank
this
you.
This is what I would like to add. Thank you.
Thank you so much, John. Just very quickly, Geoffrey, you can pick that up.
Yeah. sensitization is one of the key things that we need to do. It's not my responsibility, it's everybody's responsibility. John, you should be involved, everybody should be involved, community leaders, churches, everybody should be involved in sensitizing people that this is a medical condition. But however, in the treatment of mental health, we don't leave away the traditional perspective, because there's what they call transcultural psychosocial support. We integrate the traditional perspective on it in the treatment of mental health conditions.
All right. Dr. Patrick?
Yeah, he's clearly stated that. What I would say is all our efforts are needed, and we will appeal to our leaders to take mental health very seriously, to make sure every aspect of mental health is cross-cut through every sector of the society, from traditional to organized setups, and we'll be there.
All right, Dr. Patrick Sokiri and Geoffrey, thank you so much for coming to Miraya Studios. We do appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, too.